of CBD or non-psychoactive pot. Also, the New York Times refuses to retract its misguided story about the Syrian government's first use of chemical weapons on its citizens and a killer oil spill that is making life much worse for the people of the Philippines still recovering from Typhoon Yolanda. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We turn our attention back to Syria and, well, who was it that used those chemical weapons? Was it the government? Was it the rebels? According to the New York Times, it was in fact the Syrian government, unequivocally. But now information coming out of the United Nations and reported by Robert Perry in consortiumnews.com contradicts this storyline about it being a fact that it was the Syrian government. Bob, welcome back to Flashpoints. Let's talk about the substance and then the reporting that the Times and others did that was really misreporting and uninformed. Set up the story.
Well, as your listeners know, on August 21st, there was this incident of sarin gas being released in a suburb of Damascus. And it killed a number of people, according to the doctors on the ground, apparently a lot fewer than the U.S. government has claimed, but still a significant number of people died. The issue became who did it. The Syrian government denied that they had launched the attack. The rebels pointed the finger at the government. The United States, which was at that point on the verge of thinking about attacking Syria, very quickly jumped to the conclusion that the Syrian government had done it. On August 30th, a strange white paper was released. It was called a government assessment, something we've never seen before in Washington. And it became quite clear, and I was hearing this from sourcing inside the government, but also others were picking up certain aspects of this, that there was great uncertainty, actually, among the CIA and other analysts about who had done it. But the powers that be higher up wanted to finger the Syrian government. The analysts had a bit of a rebellion, threatening to put out their dissents, which forced the Obama administration not to use what they normally would use, which would be a national intelligence estimate. And that reflects the views of the 16 U.S. intelligence agencies. But it also includes footnotes when there is dissent among these agencies, and there would have been if that had been released. So the Obama administration essentially did a dodgy dossier, which cut out all the dissents and just put out assessments that the U.S. government wanted out. The other odd thing about this report that came out on August 30th was that there was not a single piece of verifiable evidence included. There were assessments and allegations, but nothing that anyone could check. So there wasn't any real evidence being presented that the Syrian government did it. It was just pretty much the assertion of Secretary of State Kerry and others. It also was interesting that when Kerry went out and did his various presentations, there were no representatives of the U.S. intelligence community prominently seated with him, unlike what happened in 2003 when Secretary of State Colin Powell made the case that Iraq was hiding WMD, and behind him was the CIA director, George Tenet. In this case, the dog not barking was the U.S. intelligence community, because there was such dissent within it. So anyway, we push forward, and then comes the first U.N. report based on their inspections, and they inspected two sites. One in Moedamia, which was south of Damascus, and one in Zamalka, which is east of Damascus. And so there were two rockets that were recovered. And if you read the report carefully, there was a lot of uncertainty even by the UN inspectors. They thought the sites had been tampered with and so forth, but they were able to, what they determined was that they found no sarin in Moedamia. They looked at 13 places, including the remnants of the rocket, and they found no sarin or other chemical weapon agents present. they did find sarin in Zamalca. But then what happened is interesting because the Human Rights Watch, which has been pushing, the U.S. to intervene militarily in Syria, put out a map which showed that if you took the angles at which the missiles landed, the two missiles, and you took them back far enough, 9.5 kilometers, they'd intersect on a Syrian military base. So Human Rights put out this map, and the New York Times, a couple days later, made a big front page article based on this map, buying into this argument that the vectoring analysis of these two intersecting flight paths supposedly showed where the missiles had originated. They supposedly originated at a elite Syrian government military base. Slam dunk, QED, case solved. And that's how the New York Times presented it. And that's how it's been picked up by the rest of the mainstream media. However, there have been many problems with this analysis, and more objective observers, including this website in the UK called Who Guta, they've been looking at various parts of this, as have some others. I was writing about this in August and September of this year. Cy Hirsch has recently come out with a significant report in the London Review of Books, of all places, also questioning this evidence. And the point, and now it appears that the New York Times case, the Human Rights Watch case, has collapsed. It turns out that these rockets, these are very short-range rockets, and they only go about 2 kilometers. And if that's the case, you can't take their flight paths back 9.5 kilometers and see where they intersect, because they couldn't go that far. There's also the problem of the Muad'Dimiyah rocket, because it came in and clipped a building before landing. So while you can trace the last part of its flight path, I guess, the fact that it clipped a building would alter its flight path so it could not be accurately assessed. And as I pointed out, that rocket didn't carry sarin gas anyway. So you have another problem. You only have one rocket that carried sarin gas, and that's the one that landed in Zamalca. And so you can't do a vector analysis with one flight path. And so there are all these problems with the story that the New York Times presented it. And it even turned out, I just realized this today, I was going back through some, the UN had a press conference a week or so ago when they released an updated version of their report. And at the news conference, the chief investigator, Åke Sällström, he's a Swedish scientist and was head of this investigative team, he said that they also looked at this question of how far these rockets could go. They consulted their own experts as well as reviewing what others had done, and he concluded that, yes, these rockets can go about 2 kilometers. And he said, so therefore, this idea of tracing back the path doesn't work. So he said this at a press conference, and his comments were pretty much ignored because they go against this certainty that the New York Times has expressed and others have picked up on, that this proves the whole case, that you get these two intersecting lines and they go 9.5 kilometers and they cross at this military base, ergo that's where the rockets came from. But even the head of the UN inspection team now says, if you simulate the flight path, it seems not to meet as may be indicated in the report. In other words, you can't do what the New York Times did. And so now we're really sort of back to square one in a way, if you look at the reality as opposed to the press perceptions. The reality is that we don't really know who did it. We do know that inside the U.S. intelligence community, there was a great deal of dissent about this rush to judgment fingering the Assad regime. We know that the Assad regime has denied doing it. We also know that in some ways it made no sense for the Assad regime to have launched this attack, because they had just invited this U.N. inspection team into Syria to inspect what the government said were examples of the rebels using chemical weapons. And this, the UN team arrived on August 18th. They were basically unpacking their bags in Damascus when this attack occurs on August 21st. And clearly, the government had no interest in both diverting the UN team from the inspection that the government wanted them to take and bringing them into this other case. Plus, it also raised the question of the red line that President Obama had drawn, and which almost triggered a U.S. military intervention against the Syrian government. So there was, so not only are there are these problems with the evidence, which are multiple, but there's also this question of how would this make any sense for the Syrian government to have done what the U.S. government still insists, there's no question, there's no rational objection to, that this is what happened. Even as recently as a week or so ago, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Samantha Power, came out and said, there's no truth to any doubts that we have about the Syrian government's guilt in this, and we are not going to be cooperating with the Assad regime because it gasses its own people. So you have this kind of, you have this, something very similar to what we saw in a decade ago when the New York Times and the played along with the Bush administration in promoting very dubious claims about the Iraqi government's WMD. If you recall, I'm sure you do, Dennis, the famous story in September of 2002 where the New York Times cited the Iraqi purchase of some aluminum tubes, and it was all presented as this must be for nuclear centrifuges, which must mean that the Iraqi government has a secret nuclear program. If you read deep into the story, you'd find a paragraph saying some expert says, oh, this could be just for our artillery purposes. But it's all then it's all kind of dismissed, and back we are with the certainty about the aluminum tubes being used for nuclear centrifuges. As we know, it turned out that those aluminum tubes were for artillery pieces. But the article was a major factor in the Bush administration making its case that if we didn't attack Iraq, there'd be these mushroom clouds, if you remember the phrasing. And so a decade later, it's almost as if, it's almost hard to even grasp fully as to how the New York Times and other major news organizations could so thoroughly forget the lessons of a decade ago, that when the U.S. government makes some claims, just because you may not like the person that's being targeted, whether it be Saddam Hussein or Bashar al-Assad, doesn't mean you should accept everything the U.S. government says as flat fact. But that happened again.
And that's the voice of Robert Perry. He's the editor of ConsortiumNews.com. Got a new article out, UN Investigator Undercuts New York Times on Syria. It's written by Robert Perry, and we're talking about this. And, of course, this is incredibly important because when the most news organizations in this country take the lead of the New York Times. For instance, just this morning, Ari Shapiro, who is a correspondent for NPR, White House correspondent, repeated this as fact. The Syrians did, in fact, use chemicals on their own people. It wasn't alleged. It wasn't anything like alleged. It was declared because this reporter felt comfortable that if it was in print in the New York Times, he could repeat it as fact. This is a problem.
Yes, there's no question it's a problem. But it gets to this, but we should not excuse other journalists from simply parroting what they see in the New York Times or here in the New York Times. There's been plenty of examples of the New York Times being wrong on major stories. The New York Times is famous for running corrections if they get someone's middle initial wrong. But when it comes to serious stuff, they don't like to admit they've actually screwed up. And you can go back not just to the aluminum tubes case, which is sort of a famous one from a decade ago, but even go back a little further to their handling of the Contra drug issue, which Dennis, you covered too. And it was, this was by the Nicaraguan Contras, and they were clearly implicated. I reported this for the Associated Press back in the mid-1980s, and Gary Webb revived the story in the mid-1990s. And it was clearly true. We had tons of evidence. And And the U.S. I knew people at high levels of the U.S. government who were telling me this evidence, so they knew it too. But the New York Times dismissed it and said it wasn't real. They made fun of it. They made fun of Gary Webb when he revived it in the 1990s. They helped destroy his career. And so you have, and then of course it turned out in 1998, the CIA's Inspector General, Frederick Hitz, came out with a lengthy report saying, yes, indeed, the Contras were deeply involved in drug trafficking, going back to their origins all the way through the whole decade of the 1980s. And the U.S. government did cover up for them. The CIA did hide evidence from other investigators at DEA and the Congress and even from CIA analysts, leading to false analyses and false information being presented to places like the New York Times. And so you have this all this history of how the New York Times gets things wrong on major events and then refuses really to make any meaningful corrections. They might sort of, in a way, sort of throw something in somewhere saying, so they can point to the 16th paragraph on some story way inside the newspaper where they'll say, well, see, we did sort of mention that point here. But they won't go up front and say, listen, we really screwed up on these big stories. We are sorry. We apologize. We want to correct the record. They just sort of push forward. And here you have a lot of evidence now, including the UN, the chief of the UN inspection, saying that this front page story of the New York Times is essentially bollocks. And that he's, now he didn't use those words, but he's saying, if you read between the lines, that's what he's saying. But the New York Times, so far, has made no effort to do a front page story saying, well, we got that one wrong.
All right. Well, the New York Times has been hesitant, and it's been wrong or resistant.